Operator here. Welcome to the Cyberpunk Matrix Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything cyberpunk. In just a second, we're going to connect you to the cyberspace. So hold on to your seatbelt, Dorothy, because Kansas is going bye-bye.
All right, hello and welcome. This is your host, Alex, and you have reached the Cyberpunk Matrix Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything cyberpunk. Today, I'm joined by cyberpunk writer and author Matthew A. Goodwin, who has written a cyberpunk saga consisting of five books in the Theta World universe, if I'm not mistaken, starting with book one, Into Neon. Matthew, welcome to the podcast. How's it going?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So I'm going to start off with the same kind of question that I ask everyone who comes on the podcast. What is your definition of cyberpunk? How would you describe this genre?
I really think that's a great starting point because cyberpunk is one of those things that sort of like that old joke about pornography. It's hard to define, but I know it when I see it. if you've ever spent time on Reddit or on any of the cyberpunk forums, the biggest debate all the time is, what is cyberpunk? Is this cyberpunk? Is that property cyberpunk? Go into one of those rooms and say, is the fifth element cyberpunk? No two people are going to give you the same answer.
Yeah.
For me, I'm pretty much a classicist, so I'll say it's high tech, low life. You know, if you've got the advanced technologies and the sort of hard living for most of the people and the wealthy elite, that's going to be a good foundation for cyberpunk. Cyberspace always helps a lot, but there's just so many smaller aspects. It seems that you now need a cyberpunk aesthetic as well. You know, with Ridley Scott sort of setting the tone for how cyberpunk looks with Blade Runner, it sort of has to have a sort of aesthetic to it. If you think about something like the opening scene to The Matrix, it does have that noir look of cyberpunk. It's rainy and it's neon and in this case green. But I think that is also very cyberpunk. But it's one of those things that we could probably spend the next hour just listing elements that tend to be cyberpunk. I think flying cars are often among the list there too.
Yeah. For sure. Although I don't think there are any flying cars in The Matrix, and that would be, well, flying vehicles, sure. But I think this is a really interesting question for you specifically, Matthew, because you went out and wrote not just one, but multiple books. And I'm looking at your website here just to see the cover art, and they all look very neon. Very cyberpunky. They're almost all raining in some sort. And you went out and decided to call them all a cyberpunk saga. You put the name cyberpunk into these books. So how do you know that your series is cyberpunk? Like, how do you recognize it? And what made you decide to want to start this series?
Oh, well, that's a great question. So I'll start with the second question first. The reason I wrote this series, so I did NaNoWriMo, so National Novel Writing Month, three years ago, and I wrote a fantasy novel because I've always loved fantasy, and it was the second in a series, so I had just written 50,000, 60,000 words, and then during NaNo, I did another 40,000, and I was so burnt out. So that December, right after National Novel Writing Month, I said, I need to write something that if I have to look at another dwarf or an elf, I can't stand it. So I'll go into my other passion, which is science fiction. And sure. I've always loved cyberpunk. Blade Runner, seeing that for the first time, really Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, the book on which it was based, was the thing that sort of really hooked me. But then Neuromancer, and of course, The Matrix sort of being two other ones that really got their hooks in me young. Those made me really love cyberpunk. And so when it came time for me to want to take a break from fantasy, I thought, I'm going to try something that's cyberpunk. And that's how I started writing a cyberpunk saga. And as it developed, as writing the first book developed, I realized this is going to be one of those things that might turn into a series. So I wrote it, the first book, you've read the first book, so you know it's a contained story, but I did leave it open at the end with a much larger world where there's a lot of opportunity for more storytelling. So as I've told more stories in this world, it has made me want to tell even more stories where certain side characters I want to write entire novellas about, which I've already done once, but I plan to continue to do. And I think the way that I know it's cyberpunk is because I really hit a lot of the tropes. One trope that I didn't delve so much into is I don't spend much time in cyberspace. And it's interesting too, because you think of, you know, for a long time, going into cyberspace was something that was sort of contained to cyberpunk for the most part. And now Lit RPG has actually become its own entire thing. And it's interesting. It's a difficult thing to sometimes discern where, I mean, Lit RPG is its own specific thing, but you could do a cyberpunk story with Lit RPG elements. I think Ready Player One being the most specific example of that. I think you could argue that Ready Player One is both cyberpunk and Lit RPG. And so I just think that's sort of an interesting thing. But for my books, you know, it has augmented people. It has a digital world. It does have evil mega corporations. It does have, you know, ruffians fighting the power. It has gangs. It has mega cities, neon, ramen shops. I mean, I hit, like for the first book, I hit every single trope. I've moved away from that now as I've, you know, found my own voice and developed my own world. But you've read Into Neon, you know, it hits every single cyberpunk trope that I could, find.
And yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you're a cyberpunk fan, I have put more Easter eggs in that first book. I mean, it is ridiculous. I think I reference almost every single cyberpunk property in that first book. I think I referenced Deus Ex within like the first two pages even.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things I snuck in there.
I feel like I caught some of those, but now that you're saying how many there are, I feel like I must have missed a lot more. I definitely, I just wanted to say, I remember when Moss gets out of that corporate city and lands for the first time with this taxi, I believe, into the gritty, rainy streets. I'm like, okay, here we go. it fitted so well. And your characters were really fun, and I really enjoyed it. Actually, since starting this blog, I've had a few other authors reach out to me, and I won't mention who they are, but not everyone's content is easy to read. There was one author in particular that I really wanted to review, but I just couldn't get past his style of writing. He was doing way too much exposition, and I had to put it down, and I feel bad, but I didn't want to write a bad review, and it wasn't compelling enough for me to finish, and so I decided to just stop. But that was not at all the case with Into Neon. I mean, this was a page turner. It was really fast and fun. It reminded me of Ready Player One also, because I read that like three times because it's just such a page turner. And it was really great. And I haven't been able to find books quite as fast paced as that one. So
thank you for saying that. And I think you're also hitting on something that's sort of unique to cyberpunk. Cyberpunk tends toward dark and gritty, and oftentimes not slow, but a little dense, maybe more dense.
Sure.
And I really didn't want to go that direction with my series. I love those books. I love that Neuromancer, you know, that old joke, like Neuromancer requires a PhD just to read. I love Neuromancer, but that is just not what I set out to write. I thought it would be more fun to write something that was a little bit more like an action adventure. Some of the things that I grew up loving, like Star Wars, you know, I think there's room for all types of storytelling in any genre. So while cyberpunk tends to be much, much darker, I tried to approach dark subjects with a bit of a lighter touch, with trying to be a bit more fun with a lot of those things.
Yeah.
And I hope I succeeded. I enjoy the world that I've created. So I guess that's something anyway. At least I enjoy it.
Definitely.
But it's funny, just two nights ago in preparation for this podcast, I decided to rewatch the Matrix with my wife. And she, after it ended, she goes, "Man, there's a lot of similarities between your books and The Matrix, huh?" And I was like, "Ah, so, you clearly hadn't watched this for a long time." Yes, I was very inspired by that. Because, you know, Ready Player One, The Matrix, and my books are the sort of three examples of not, they do a Chosen One much more seriously than I do, but sure, sort of that hero's journey style in a cyberpunk world. When I wrote my fantasy series, I did a noir murder mystery, which is much more in keeping with what you see in cyberpunk. And then, of course, I turned to cyberpunk and I decided to do a hero's journey, which you always, which you always see in fantasy.
Yeah.
Because clearly I am an idiot. But I thought it was kind of cool to do a different take on it. So it was fun to, you know, I've even joked in the fifth book, which will be out next week, I make a couple of jokes where people have started to call Moss the Chosen One, and he does not like it because that is not at all how he feels or really what he is like.
That's really, it's really interesting. I mean, well, Neo was convinced that he wasn't the one, and then the Oracle told him he wasn't the one, and he was like, "Well, okay then, but maybe I can change that script." Yeah, no, but I think that your book was really fun, like I said, and the hero's journey is old because it works. I mean, it's so classic. You have Back to the Iliad and the Odyssey, stories of heroes overcoming obstacles. And, you know, sometimes I watch a movie or I read a book and there is no goal that's outlined at the beginning. There's no challenge. Things just kind of happen. And that's not compelling at all. Those kinds of stories are things that I very quickly kind of put down. But I wanted to go back, Matthew, to something that you said that I sort of I'm familiar with, but clearly not enough. Can you describe to me what is lit RPG exactly?
Oh, okay. So lit RPG is it's a newer subgenre of science fiction, and basically it is stories that are told where you know the main character is a person playing a role-playing game either online or in a digital world. So it's very clearly set out where the main character is experiencing their story, their hero's journey, whatever it is, but in a video game, very clearly marked as a video game. So they level up and they will gain loot and all of the things that you think about of a role-playing game, but it's being told as a story, as literature. So that's where the lit RPG comes from.
Oh, okay. So it's basically a story with an avatar.
100%, and it's become very popular. I set up, not intentionally, but I set up what is going to be a lit RPG novella that takes place between books 3 and 4 of my Cyberpunk Saga series, where one of the characters goes missing, and the way that they reconnect with them is through meeting them in the online world. And I realized, oh, that's a lit RPG story, so I started to write that as just a prologue, and I realized, oh, this is a much bigger story and it's actually a different genre. So I will save this story and later on I can tell it as its own whole standalone lit RPG book.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah, that reminds me of, you mentioned NaNoWriMo as your beginning for your journey into writing. And I know that because actually the first guest on the podcast, Stephen, he did NaNoWriMo as well. And he entered a writing competition where he had to create a character and someone else was creating the contest. And so then different writers would write in using the character that they made up, their own way of how they would move on in this tournament. And so I wrote alongside him. And then once he lost in round 3 or 4, the character that I made up with continued, and I actually created a full standalone book just for fun as a hobby.
That is really cool.
Based on, but I mean, I was taking a lot of all the characters that appear in this book that I made were from other characters writing in this writing competition for NaNoWriMo. So it was a fun little, you know, summer
that
thing.
That sounds really interesting and very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it ends up being a fantasy, and it's I mean, all the characters are completely wild and completely different from each other. But it was fun. It was fun. So I can see how that's interesting to do, but also like it can burn you out a lot.
Oh, but it sounds like such an interesting exercise too. You know, of course, when you create all the characters yourself, they are going to in some ways have a version of your voice. Hopefully you can make them distinct and all that. But
yeah.
To have to then write in somebody else's voice with a character that somebody else created, I think is actually really a cool exercise and probably exhausting and difficult.
Well, I found that it was actually easier because what happens is for each character, they create a character sheet with the motivations and a bit of their back history. And so I didn't have to make those all up from scratch. And so one character was kind of, I could tell it was like, it was a Joker that was kind of modeled after the Joker, but had its own, it was more like a jester type. And I wouldn't have ever created that on my own, but I was able to take that character and kind of go with it. And so I am definitely very interested in one day writing my own cyberpunk novel. I have my own ideas about that, but it's not nearly as developed as you have of already 4 or 5 books in.
Well, but you have to understand, of course, you know, when I set out to write it, I part of the reason I also wanted to switch from my fantasy world was I had done that thing that I think a lot of authors do, where I had started writing my story Bible and my world Bible, and I spent so much time. I mean, my fantasy world, I think, has 24 different gods that I never mentioned once in any of the books, because wow. I spent so much time developing this world. So when I set out to write Into Neon, I started to create things more organically. Obviously, over time, I had to start outlining things much more detailed, and I had to start figuring out, okay, wait a minute, if you have a private police force, other things need to change if government isn't controlling. But at first, I actually just sort of let things grow a bit organically. If I had an idea, I would just expound on it. I mean, you talked about Moss leaving the Burbs. For me, the Burbs was just, you know, like that Microsoft campus where people lived at work, and I just sort of took that to the next evolution. Of course, it was a little odd writing something where everybody worked from home and everybody did computer jobs in their apartment that was subsidized by their employer, and then a year and a half later to watch as that actually happened in the world. I think that's one of the fun things about writing cyberpunk. Yeah. I saw a headline yesterday that said a woman or a guy was texting with his dead partner after they had been together, and this computer program used, you know, her emails to recreate her. And I was like, that is literally an episode of Black Mirror.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool to, it's cool and horrifying, because cyberpunk being sort of dark and likes to focus on the perils of technology. So it's both cool and scary to watch as the world becomes the things that we write about.
Absolutely. And I think that cyberpunk can perhaps evolve past that. Maybe we can discuss, I'm curious to see what your thoughts are about this, because in my blog, one of my segments that I created organically just for fun is this cyberpunk, where I take things that seem tangentially cyberpunk. One of my favorite ones to do was I took, what was it? It was the Wolverine movie where he goes to
the Wolverine, right?
The Wolverine, yes, there we go, where he goes to Japan. And suddenly I noticed, you know, it's dark and gritty and rainy, and there's this big wealthy corporation, and then personal like feuding and all this stuff, and so he has to go in, and then there's even like a mecha warrior at the end. And so I noticed these parallels, and so I said, you know, is this cyberpunk or not? Because it is very similar. And so and I was able to get a little discussion going on there, but I just started taking more and more different things. And I think a lot of people think that cyberpunk can't be for kids, that it has to be too serious or too dark, you know, with the themes of sex or drugs or it just can't be. You can't have cyberpunk, but for 12-year-olds or for 9-year-olds. And I absolutely don't think that. I think that you can have like a PG-13 version of cyberpunk, and you can have different versions of things as long as they're discussing deeper issues. And so I actually just published this today, a review of the Amazon series Upload. Have you seen that?
I have, and I'm happy to talk about that show, because I I considered it the first cyberpunk rom-com.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, when I saw the trailer for that, I was surprised because I was like, wait a minute, they're taking digital consciousness and making a joke out of it? That's hard.
Yeah, but they
do it so well.
They threaded that needle really, really well.
It asked
big questions, and it brought up really interesting points about the nature of digital consciousness and its interaction with the real world and with other digital consciousness. I thought it was really fascinating, and at its core, it also works as a romantic comedy where you really were rooting for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is funny. I'm really happy because in all of my cyberpunk talks, I have not encountered anybody who has wanted to talk about this. I was pretty sure you were going to say devs or something and we could talk about the serious, heavy stuff. But I actually really enjoyed Upload also, and I'm really excited to see that they're currently filming a second season.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah, and I think that should be coming out later this year. But yes, there's so many... there's so many types of media out there that kind of, it's very close. There's one other that I thought was very interesting that I talked about on my blog, which is Tomorrowland. Are you a fan of Disney?
I am. Yeah. I do enjoy myself some Disney.
Okay.
Just finished Loki recently.
Oh yeah, that was, well, now that's Disney, sure. But Tomorrowland is just classic Disney from the Disneyland attraction parks, and they made a movie out of it. Have you seen that movie?
I have not. Will you be seeing Jungle Cruise?
I will when it comes out. I think it's coming out very soon, if not today. In France, it may be a delayed release. So Tomorrowland is a utopia, right? So the idea... Okay, so first off, Tomorrowland is a movie that came out...
It looks like solar punk, is that right?
Sort of. It doesn't have anything to do with the sun, though. It came out in 2015. Here we go. And basically, it shows you what utopia might look like. So not dystopia, as we're used to with cyberpunk, but utopia. And I thought that was interesting to see, because what if technology was actually good? I mean, with cyberpunk, we're always warned of the dangers and perils of technology, but what if it was actually used the way it's supposed to, perfectly? What would that world look like? And I took Tomorrowland to be an interesting example of the opposite of cyberpunk. So it's totally not cyberpunk, but by knowing the opposite of cyberpunk, we can kind of tell what is, right? So knowing through the opposites.
Yeah, I think that's really great. And I think what you're describing is pretty close to solar punk, which is basically envisioning a world where we have green, sustainable technologies and we do solve the world's problems through technological means, through advancements, through human advancement. So I think I would have to look closer, and maybe I'll get roasted for it, but I'm pretty sure that's close to the goal of solar punk in a lot of ways. And I think that's really cool, and I would love to see more stories like that. Especially, you know, in the last year, I did fall off writing a little bit, because when the world started to feel a little too dystopian, it stopped being as fun to write.
I can see that, yeah.
So I do like optimism. I like the idea of telling a story where you do focus on the future tech, but that humans actually can get it right.
Sure.
I mean, you know, we're starting to show that if humans all pull together in one direction, we can solve major crises quickly and
absolutely
powerfully. So maybe we could take a lesson from the last year and I mean, you know, it's backsliding now maybe, but like, you know, maybe we can take a lesson from, if we all work together, we can start to solve some of the problems that are plaguing our planet.
Right. Like, most obviously now that we all had the same problem of COVID, and we were able to find not one, but like six different types of vaccines really fast. And now sharing all of them across the world and, you know, coming to the next stage, which is, these are helpful. If you're not vaccinated, you tend to be more likely to die than if you are. Mm-hmm. So that's a pattern that you can observe. And maybe it's a good idea to take it. I don't know.
I assume we'll veer away from the political.
Yeah, no, definitely. But, you know, just having that goal of everyone around the world combating the same thing is interesting, and using technology to help with that.
Yeah, and I think it's a really ripe area for storytelling. I think that there's a lot of opportunity there. And I think sort of what you mentioned about Upload and about Tomorrowland, I think it's I like the idea of different storytelling. You know, right now a lot of in science fiction too is focusing on different voices in storytelling, which is also great. But I also think it's a good time to maybe start to tell different stories too. I saw James Gunn yesterday said that comic books are to him at this point just boring, and that it's time to shake it up. And maybe that's true. Maybe in a lot of traditional entertainment, it's a good time to try just different things. And of course, you know, a lot of them aren't going to work, or they're just going to end up being weird. And there's a reason that they haven't been done before, but maybe you'll find some real gems, you know?
Sure. I like Loki.
Yeah. Right.
The whole series of Loki did not feel like a superhero series to me at all. And WandaVision also felt very different up until the end.
Right. Yeah. Falcon and Winter Soldier was definitely the most traditional comic book thing. I'm excited for What If. I think that's going to be cool too, but I was really happy to see that Marvel was willing to take some risks. You know,
yeah,
the superhero movies, while they were doing it for my money better than just about anybody, it is very formulaic, and the formula works, but it is very formulaic. So it was nice. I mean, that first episode of WandaVision, those first three or four episodes, I was just gobsmacked because it was so different and so unique.
So different, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, the last two episodes, of course, just became traditional comic book fare in a lot of ways. But that opening stuff, and I think Loki throughout the whole series just was willing to take some big swings. I mean, when I saw Alligator Loki, I mean, you know, that's just, I can't even describe that feeling.
I actually took it as straight. I was like, yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, at that point,
everything else was everything,
so you're like, sure.
It was so odd. I really, did you like the, what was the name of that planet that was getting destroyed?
Mm-hmm. The one that was almost vaguely cyberpunk for like a hot second.
Yeah. I'm sure you recognize it.
And Falcon and Winter Soldier too. They went to Lowtown, which, you know, nobody was working too hard on coming up with that name. But when they go, I think it was called Lowtown. And I remember the cyberpunk forums the next day were going crazy with, oh man, they really nailed the cyberpunk aesthetic. It was so cool to see. And then, it is nice to see that sort of look.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So let's come back to some of the main cyberpunk questions that I had. So to review, I think I was going to ask this, but you kind of answered it already, but I'll just ask it again so it's more clear. What were the cyberpunk media that got you into cyberpunk? I think you mentioned The Matrix, the book Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And after you tell me what were the ones again that got you into it, what are your favorite ones now?
Oh, that's great. So obviously when I read Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep the first time, I was blown away. I just remember thinking it was one of the coolest things I had ever seen or ever read. And then I went and watched Blade Runner. And then at the time there was a Westwood Studios game of the same name of Blade Runner that I loved to play. And I still have my original 4-disc CDs in my office, so I can't play it, obviously. I can play it through digital, but you can't play CDs anymore.
For emulator. It's still cool. Yeah.
So the world of Blade Runner in all its iterations has always been a huge inspiration for me. And then, of course, you know, reading Neuromancer. I think the first time I probably didn't understand 10 words in the whole thing, but
it was very confusing. Yeah.
I still thought it was so cool. And to this day, I still circle back and reread it, you know, sort of every other year.
Sure. The dialogue Matrix, is incredible.
When I first saw The Matrix, I mean, you know, that movie, and even just watching it again this week, I was like, holy smokes, mm-hmm. this is still really good. I see now things that I didn't notice at the time that don't work for me as well now. There's a lot of explaining the world. There's sort of 40 minutes in the middle where it's just scene after scene of them explaining the world, which is fine because they do it really, really well. But now as a storyteller myself, I'm like, there are ways that you can do this where you don't have one character say it's an EMP and another character explain what an EMP is. There are ways to do that through storytelling.
That
work a little bit better. But man, oh man, it's still, I mean, and the graphics are still, they hold up. It's like that and Jurassic Park are two movies that I think like, man, they really got it right. Where then you go watch episode one and you're just like, this is almost unwatchable. And not just for how bad of a movie it is, but because of the special effects.
Yeah, yeah. No, those both were really good. I actually, well, first disclaimer, I didn't actually like Blade Runner the first time I saw it. But I was I was much older. I feel like I am, though. I mean, I haven't really come across many cyberpunk fans who didn't like Blade Runner. But also for The Matrix, I had heard about The Matrix, but then I saw Matrix Reloaded first, and I was very confused.
I can't even imagine what that would be like.
I got a vague sense of what it was. But then it was interesting because when I saw The Matrix after Matrix Reloaded, The Matrix felt like a prelude or a prologue that explained the world, and so it was even more fun to be thrown in without any explanation and then going back and going, oh, okay,
that's kind of cool. I remember, I think the creators of Westworld said that for them the first two seasons they considered that just a prologue for the actual show that they wanted to do.
That might explain why I couldn't get into it as much.
It's funny. That's one of those shows that I totally understand. Blade Runner, I understand less why a person wouldn't like. But with Westworld, I could appreciate, especially the second season became a real slog. But for me, it spoke to my exact taste because I also love Westerns. So
you got
Westerns and you got cyberpunk. I'm all in. And plus, I actually loved the original movie. When I was a kid, I saw it and I just thought it was so cool, and Yul Brynner was so cool, and I thought it was really interesting. And then the Itchy and Scratchy Land episode of The Simpsons just sort of solidified my love of the original Westworld. So I was thrilled when the TV show came out, and season three really is cyberpunk. I mean, they get into some real cyberpunk stuff there.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. I feel like I need to watch that. That has the actor from Breaking Bad, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, Aaron Paul joins in the third season. And, you know, you got Anthony Hopkins in the first season. So, you've got some really talented people.
Absolutely.
Doing some cool stuff. And, it's Christopher Nolan's brother, whose name I can't remember now, and Lisa Joy, who are running it. So, they have some good people doing some cool stuff. But you could probably skip the second season.
But now, it's 2021. Matrix 1 came out in 1999. We've had a bit more time. You've seen a lot more contemporary cyberpunk media like Upgrade or Battle Angel Alita or Blade Runner 2049. Now that you've had more time and I feel like we're experiencing a bit of a cyberpunk renaissance, what is your favorite cyberpunk media that's come out?
2049. I mean, actually, the three things that you just listed, I enjoyed all of them. I love 2049. I'm just a cyberpunk fan, so I will tend to enjoy things. I mean, Alita is just fun. I mean, it might not be the best movie out there, but I had a great time watching it, and I have rewatched it more times than I would have expected. It's one of those things that if it's on and my kid isn't home, then maybe I'll just sit there and watch it again. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And Upgrade, I really liked Upgrade too. So you've listed three things that I really really enjoyed. I helped to kickstart Venus, which was a cyberpunk short film, and I really enjoyed
Okay.
that too. I thought they did a phenomenal job with that, and I hope that it gets, turned into a proper full-length movie. And well, I'll admit it, I enjoyed Cyberpunk 2077, and I started playing it on night one, and it was really broken. But I still stuck with it and played it through to completion, and I was just happy to be running around in a cyberpunk world. If they're not going to
Yeah.
give me Deus Ex 4, then at least I had something.
Absolutely. I was going to actually ask you, and for me, it was the same thing that I bought it on. I think that's the first video game I've ever bought for full price on day one. I've never done that before. Like, I always wait 2 years and then pay half the price. But this
That's a
one,
smart way to do it.
with the hype and everything, and I was like, no, I have to know what's going on. And which faction did you choose?
Oh, so I was a street kid.
Okay.
You?
Standard. I was Nomad. But because the backstory of Nomad spoke to me more, so I moved
Yeah,
around
for
a
me,
bit
growing up in
as
San
a kid,
Francisco, it
so
just felt like street kid was the thing that I sort of connected to the most. Corpo definitely didn't feel. I mean, if I go back and play through, I will certainly want to try the other paths, but having done it once, I don't think I want to dip back in until they really fix it and expand it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
Because
I've wanted. Go ahead.
it was fun to play, and I was just happy to be in a cyberpunk world, as I said. But man, I mean, there were times it was hard to play. I mean, my wife was sitting next to me, and I made a joke, and of course, it became a whole meme. I was like, man, I've picked up another fucking dildo over here. This is getting out of hand. And I'm happy that they fixed it really quickly, but it was ridiculous at first.
Wow. Did you play on the PlayStation or?
On Xbox One.
Oh, okay. I played on the computer, so I didn't have that many bugs. At the beginning, there was the seeing the bushes in the distance problem, but then it kind of got fixed very quickly. But then my
Yeah, it
issue
sounds
is that
like
they,
PC was the way to do it. I think if I could have gone back, I definitely would have gotten it for PC instead. It's
yeah. So
just
for
hard
the
because my computer is near my kids' room and the Xbox is in the living room, so that's literally the reason that I now play on a console more than on my PC.
No, sure, yeah, that makes sense. If I weren't moving around so much, I would probably still be on. I had to leave my Xbox in the US when I moved to France, so
Oh no.
I mean, it's heavy and the power
It is
outage is di
that.
power is different and the games don't even run because it depends on the screens and anyways. But no, I mean, I was able to get Steam and so I do it like that, and so
Right,
it was
you
fine.
have way more games than any console player.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem is my computer doesn't have that much space. So for me, having a hot fix or whatever every other month of
Right,
30
that are all 38
gigabytes,
gigabytes. Yep.
it's so right now I have to. I updated it before, didn't play it because I was planning to play it. And then they came out with another hot fix, and I don't have enough space. So I just haven't updated it yet because I don't want to keep on taking stuff off and updating it.
Right, and at this point, they're only going to keep adding. I mean, until you get an external hard drive or something to install it on, you're probably just not going to be able to play, I guess. Which is
Yeah, unless if I delete
fine because,
stuff.
I think, as I said, I think they are going to go back and they're going to add more content and flesh it out a bit and do some of the things that they had sold us on when they were trying to sell the game.
Sure.
Obviously, I was hoping for it to be a huge success so that more people were really excited about Cyberpunk and wanted to buy all of my books immediately. But
Oh yeah, you were
I was really hoping
connected
that
financially.
it would have benefited me to get my books in front of more people. But it is nice because now it has increased awareness of Cyberpunk, but it's not just all sorts of people flocking. It is more people who played the game and are excited about the genre specifically So I do have a couple of reviews that are like, I like Cyberpunk 2077, and so I picked up this book and have really enjoyed it, and that's been kind of nice too.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I think that and Altered Carbon seasons 1 and 2 helped. It's a shame that season 2 was just not as strong as season 1. I
I
thought it
have to admit,
was.
I didn't even watch season 2. I just kept hearing such sort of tepid responses about it that I haven't even dipped into it yet.
If you've read, have you read the three books?
I only read the first one.
Okay. I read the second and third. They're quite different. Book two is mainly on Mars and feels kind of military. And book three is kind of a confusing, never-ending quest kind of thing. It's kind of mixed together. He goes to a bunch of different places and he keeps on changing his team or his group. But I thought it was good. And so I wanted to watch season two because it takes elements of books two and three. And so I thought it was good, but they really push the romance angle that was not in either one of the books. And I like Anthony Mackie in general. I've noticed he's been in several, he was in a sort of cyberpunk other standalone movie on Netflix.
Netflix really wanted me to watch that. I remember seeing a lot of it at the time.
Yeah. And so I think it's still worth your time.
I will circle around to it. And, you know, I like the world and I too like Anthony Mackie. So I think I will definitely, I'll probably enjoy it more than a lot of the people who didn't enjoy it so much, but also sure. Maybe just giving it some time. I won't go in with heightened expectations that I might have otherwise going in, because I really enjoyed the first season and it set a good tone. Although I know people have a lot of problems with it, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, it doesn't seem like you're a cyberpunk purist, so I think you would enjoy it.
Well, no, I mean, if my work is any evidence, I like cyberpunk world, I like cyberpunk questions, and I don't need it to be any one thing. I mean, what you were saying that it couldn't be for kids, I think that's a great point. I think any genre should be open to any type of storytelling. I don't like gatekeeping that kind of. I don't think that that's necessary. I think you can, any kind of storytelling in any kind of world, just do it. And, you know, if you're a person who happens to fall on the Venn diagram of I like cyberpunk and I have a kid, then there should be something there for you too.
Absolutely. That's why Disney is something for everyone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but they seem to have it figured out.
But coming back to, I just wanted to segue a bit into the next few questions I had was, all right, so you've told us kind of your favorite cyberpunk media, how you got into the genre and a bit of the past, but what do you think about the future of cyberpunk? Do you think that because of Cyberpunk 2077, it's a bit of a bust and it's just going to go downhill from here? Or do you think that because of other media coming out, like I think they have Edgerunners coming out on Netflix next year based on the game, do you foresee there being a lot more interest in cyberpunk in general?
I think as you said, it does feel like a bit of a renaissance. I mean, there are some good cyberpunk games out and it looks like coming out. Like Ghost Runner was really cool.
Right.
And like a lot of the Shadowrun games, which are older, but like there's still like really good cyberpunk video games. Oh, Cloudpunk was really cool. I actually wrote on a cyberpunk video game called Silken Dreams. So I think that, you know, in gaming, there's a lot of really cool cyberpunk storytelling with The Matrix 4 coming out and then Ready Player 2 having just come out. I think that there is going to be a continued interest in the genre, but I don't know that it's going to explode the way it felt like it was going to when, you know, Cyberpunk 2077 was coming out and then The Matrix and Ready Player 2 all in the same like 1 year span. It felt like, oh man, cyberpunk is just going to land on everybody. And because the game didn't, I mean, it made news, but not in all of the wrong ways. So I think instead it's going to be sort of niche popular. It's going to stay what it has always been, which is popular among people who love cyberpunk or who somehow managed to stumble upon it.
Okay. Well, I mean, with Ready Player 2, I didn't even know that the book was coming out. Do you think they're going to make a Ready Player 2 movie? And do you think that Matrix 4 will not spark a renewed interest? Will it just be like a one-time thing?
I am cautiously optimistic about the Matrix 4. I would love for it to be great. I have a really hard time picturing a scenario where it is. You know, it's a lot later. It's a very different world, and they've told a very contained story. Like, this is going to be a very weird example, but I just watched the Friends reunion recently, and they said that one of the reasons that they haven't rebooted the show or done that is because they told a story and they contained the story. And in order to tell another story with these characters, they have to open up and start peeling back some of the things that they just closed perfectly in telling their contained story.
Right.
And so to do that with storytelling is very difficult because they told a story and they brought the story to a close, and now they're going to have to come up with ways to undo everything.
Sure. Yeah.
And that is very difficult to do. And like, you know, the fact that Blade Runner 2049 was as good as it was shocked me. When I heard that they were going to tell another Blade Runner story that many years later, I was just sort of mortified. Like, just leave it alone. Clearly nobody's touched it for a reason. I was thrilled for more stories in that world, but I just was like, they're not going to get it right. And somehow they did. And we'll see what this new animated series, Black Lotus, we'll see how that looks. But so I'm a little nervous. I don't know how much of a renewed interest. On the other hand, if Matrix 4 is as revolutionary as the first Matrix was, you know, that would be great. And maybe we will get a really sparked interest in cyberpunk going forward.
I just don't see how that's even possible, but it might be like a minor bump.
Yeah. I mean, it would be really something if they managed to pull it off again.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, I mean, also I think 2049 was really good because it was Denis Villeneuve, right? Who did that?
It was.
And I'm really excited for Dune to come out too. That's a great science fiction.
I think every science fiction fan. I mean, Dune is one of those things that I loved the other Dune, the Sci-Fi Channel Dune, and I liked the original Dune movie. And I think it's just because I like the source material so much that I will forgive a lot of sins. So if it's actually done properly, which I will have a hard time imagining it isn't going to be, I am over the moon excited for that.
Yeah, it looks really good. Actually, I haven't seen the movie or the series, but I read the book, and I'm not touching the other stuff because I just want to see this new movie and judge it on that. I don't want, like, I've forgotten.
Oh yeah, better not. Enough better of it that you don't.
That I don't want to go back and have it be spoiled. Sort
of. Yeah, and Westwood Studios. So I mentioned them earlier with the Blade Runner game. They also made a Dune game back in the day that was of the sort of style of Command and Conquer, and I loved that game too. So Dune is one of those things that I'm happy to see it hopefully getting the treatment it deserves, and it looks like there's going to be a spin-off HBO Max show to sort of go with it. So I'm really excited for more Dune in my life.
Very cool. All right, Matthew, I have one last question to wrap up this episode. What do you think about the cyberpunk community? I feel like there was a Cyberpunk Day last year that came out in October, I think, and I think you were part of that. Is there a big cyberpunk community that you're a part of? Do you like the state of it? Do you feel like it's too exclusive, or what are your thoughts on that?
So you definitely hit on something. So I actually was the person who had the idea for Cyberpunk Day, and
with
a bunch of other cyberpunk authors, we launched Cyberpunk Day last year, and we will be doing more Cyberpunk Day this year.
Very cool.
I think it's cool to bring more people in. I think there is a certain exclusivity to cyberpunk because of what I was talking about earlier, some of the literature and even the movies. I mean, Blade Runner is a dense movie too. It's slow and, you know, it's philosophical. And so it doesn't appeal to necessarily everybody. And I think that's true of a lot of cyberpunk. And so I think that there is certainly some exclusivity to it, but that's also changing. As we mentioned, there's been a lot more cyberpunk material recently. And so the people who love it are more varied, and it's just becoming a sort of a much different thing. And I've really connected so well with the cyberpunk community. I mean, look, this is the first time you and I are talking, and I feel like I would come on this podcast every week if you would let me. It's just been fun chatting with you. I think finding other like-minded people has been a real blast, and I so far am loving the cyberpunk community, and it's been nice that the cyberpunk community has so far embraced my work too. Obviously, there are some people who would much prefer different types of cyberpunk literature, but for the most part, you know, people seem to understand what I'm trying to go for with it, and it's been really working out. So I'm loving the cyberpunk community, and I'm really optimistic to continue to do Cyberpunk Day, and we'll do another sort of all virtual event this year, and then we're, you know, thinking about possibly doing an actual event the following year, so a year from October. So it would be really cool to start, you know, really expanding the cyberpunk community and getting the love of this genre out there.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I totally agree with you. I feel like they are in general very friendly and welcoming, and you know, you have some trolls on Facebook groups and whatnot, but in general, it's been a really positive experience for me as well. And like you said, that it's been great to talk to different people in the cyberpunk genre and to start talking to them more often. And I hope to have you on the show again at some point. I'm still kind of figuring out where I want to take this podcast, but just being allowing me to connect to different people in the genre has been really fun.
And certainly in October, if you want to get on and talk Cyberpunk Day, that would be really fun too.
Absolutely, that sounds good. As long as I don't have any exams to give that day or anything in my real job.
Oh yeah, that thing.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much, Matthew. This has been a lot of fun. Until next time, this has been the Cyberpunk Matrix podcast, your one-stop shop for everything cyberpunk. Make sure to check us out on YouTube, on the Cyberpunk Matrix blog, and soon on your favorite podcast streaming services. Over and out.
You have just been in the cyberspace with your host, Alex. Welcome back to the desert of the real. If your upload was smooth, leave a 5-star review on iTunes. And subscribe for more content.